Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're embarking on a really fascinating exploration into Kurdish dance. We're drawing from a collection of articles and research to try and uncover its significance.
Mm.
And for you, our listener, our aim is to move beyond just simple descriptions and really get to the heart of this vibrant tradition.
Right.
We'll look at what makes Kurdish dance so central to the culture. Its historical roots, the many forms it takes, the music that really brings it alive, and, you know, the symbolic language of the costumes.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
There is. Our goal today is to give you a thorough but still engaging understanding of Kurdish dance, its legacy, how it's evolving now in the 21st century, all without making you feel totally overwhelmed.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's unpack this. Kurdish dance. It's clearly more than just stepping in time, right? What are some of the first things we should understand about it?
Well, yeah, a key thing to realize is that when we talk about Kurdish dance, you'll often hear terms like dilin or guvin, and those can often tell you something about the region. Then there's helpark, which, you know, you might see spelled a few ways, helperki, helperin, and that basically gets at the action itself, meaning to jump or, well, to dance.
Oh, okay.
But maybe the most fundamental thing is that it's collective. It's very much a group activity, not really a showcase for individual skill.
So it's really about the community coming together.
Exactly. That group focus, it reflects and reinforces a communal spirit, you know, solidarity that's really deeply ingrained in Kurdish societal values.
Which must be so important.
Hugely important. For a stateless nation navigating, well, complex geopolitical situations, this collective part becomes incredibly vital for keeping the culture alive.
The sources mention physical linking, moving together. What does that tell us?
Right. The physical connection, whether it's holding hands or, you know, linking arms and the synchronized movements, that's a very visible way the dance emphasizes unity as a core cultural value.
Mm.
It's like a tangible expression of people acting as one.
Like the dance visually represents that ideal of community.
Precisely. You can almost see it as a microcosm of the ethical principles of the society, where the group's well-being and identity are paramount.
So, taking a broader view then,
What
makes Kurdish dance such a significant part of the culture?
Oh, it's a really indispensable cultural cornerstone. It's deeply woven into Kurdish identity itself.
Yeah.
And it's a vital part of important life events, weddings, obviously, communal gatherings like Newroz, national commemorations. It really embodies a long, rich history and, a persistent spirit.
And it's not just for happy occasions.
Not at all. It serves as a way to express a huge range of human feelings. Happiness, yes, but also sorrow. It's used to remember significant events, wars, struggles, uprisings, achievements.
Wow.
It's a living way of carrying collective memory and cultural identity forward.
It sounds like it carries a lot of weight.
It does. It strengthens social bonds, offers an emotional outlet, keeps the memory of important historical moments alive. It's like a comprehensive cultural language, articulating the full spectrum of Kurdish life and history.
Right.
It has this capacity to convey experiences from, you know, freedom, happiness, and even pain, right through to wars and struggles, uprisings, and success.
That adaptability must be key.
Absolutely. That versatility has been crucial for a culture navigating so many historical shifts. Dance remains this constant, evolving way of telling its story.
Okay, so it's both deeply rooted and incredibly important. Let's look at where these traditions might have actually come from. The sources mention connections way back to ancient times.
Yes, the history seems to stretch back thousands of years. You can see potential influences from ancient Mesopotamian civilizations.
Mm-hmm.
Some theories even suggest origins way back in the era of Astiak, of the Medes, the ancient Iranian people in the Zagros Mountains. This deep history really underscores the long evolution.
That's a serious timeline. And we even have some early written accounts, don't we?
We do. The Greek historian Xenophon, this is around 400 BCE, in his writings, The Anabasis, he documented Kurdish dancing. He referred to the people as the Kardushoi or Kardushians. Yeah, and there's even this intriguing account of them potentially using dance as a strategic maneuver, like to encircle enemy troops.
Dance is a battle tactic.
I know. It hints at an early martial aspect to some forms.
So what might the very earliest forms have been like?
Well, it's believed the earliest forms probably had ritualistic and communal purposes, things like worship, storytelling, celebrations tied to nature, the seasons.
Makes sense.
There are suggestions that some dances might have been a kind of dik, like a spiritual remembrance through rhythm performed before ancient temples. maybe temples to Anahita, as a way to recount important events, including wars.
And what about the wing dances, the Hele specifically?
Some theories connect their origins to ancient winemaking cultures.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, suggesting they evolved from the rhythmic stomping of grapes, you know, linking them to agriculture, maybe fertility rites.
Right.
And the music itself, the presence of a pentatonic structure in some of the accompanying music that creates a distinctive, almost ancient sound that also points to very deep historical layers.
So it probably wasn't just one single origin point.
It seems more like a coming together of various ancient societal functions, you know, ritual, warfare, agriculture, storytelling.
A confluence.
Exactly. This diverse origin likely contributed to the richness and complexity of the dance's symbolic language. Different forms or aspects probably arose from these different contexts, maybe merging over time into the tradition we recognize today, which has elements of epic stories, mystical expression, and celebration.
And how has this tradition managed to survive through so much history, so many challenges?
Well, it's been passed down generation to generation, holding on to its cultural significance despite huge historical changes, political challenges. Mm. It's consistently acted as a potent symbol of resistance and resilience, especially during times of hardship and oppression.
You see that.
Yeah, it's been vital for preserving cultural identity, expressing communal unity. We see that so clearly in Nuro's celebrations, even in just the act of dancing Hele when it's been suppressed.
Geography played a part too, didn't it? The mountains.
Yeah, absolutely. The mountainous terrain of Kurdistan offered a degree of natural isolation. That likely helped protect these traditions from some external pressures.
And sadly, dance itself has sometimes become politicized.
Yes, unfortunately. Especially during times of cultural or political suppression, it's transformed from, you know, purely a cultural expression into an agent of identity assertion, even political mobilization.
So performing the dance becomes an act in itself.
Exactly. Performing traditional dances can be a clear statement of cultural sovereignty, even defiance. The way Nuro celebrations, with dance right at their core, became more intense and politically charged, they became a symbol of the Kurdish resurrection in Turkey during periods of heightened state pressure.
Wow.
So the very act of dancing in those contexts, it transcends entertainment or ritual. It becomes this potent statement of cultural persistence, an affirmation of Kurdish identity against adversity.
I know the Chai Lady is here. Roj Boshana.
Roj Bosh. Oh, lovely.
Let's see. It smells wonderful today. A really good balance of spices, I think.
It does smell particularly fragrant today. Very nice.
Take a moment to enjoy the chai. That was refreshing. Yes. Just the right amount of sweetness today, too. Not bitter at all. Perfect.
Agreed. Excellent chai.
Right. Ready to get back to our exploration.
Absolutely. Where were we? Ah, yes. The different forms the dance takes. It sounds like there's quite a variety.
Definitely. The sources talk about major categories, different terms. What are some of the key names beyond Dylan and Govardhan that tell us something?
Well, we mentioned Halpark. In the Sorani-speaking areas, you'll also hear Shopi. And then, you know, anthropologically, scholars sometimes classify them. Martial dances, lyrical ones, meaning more expressive or emotional, and then mystical or religious dances.
Okay, that helps categorize them.
Yeah, it helps understand the different purposes and aesthetics. But the sheer number of terms for dance, generally, and for specific dances, often tied to regions, really highlights the rich internal diversity.
So the different names aren't just random.
Not at all. This linguistic variation points to how traditions evolved locally within different communities. It suggests this whole interconnected network of dance subcultures.
Let's look at some specifics then.
Mm.
Hele and Govardhan seem pretty central.
They are. They're the most widespread, really emblematic. Typically, dancers link up either hand-in-hand LLA or shoulder-to-shoulder omuz-omuza in a circle or semicircle.
Hmm.
But the rhythm, the tempo, the steps, they can vary quite significantly regionally.
Okay. And what about Geryon?
Geryon often works as an introduction, like in a Halpark sequence. It's usually slower, has a pattern of 6 steps, often in 34 time.
And Sepi sounds like left.
It does. Shepi is described as a group dance, simple, calm, often done at the start. The name left, yeah, it might refer to the direction or some emphasis on that side.
Shepi sounds like it picks up the pace.
It certainly does. It's fast-paced, energetic, believed to originate in the Makrian region around Mahabad in Iran. The name three steps probably refers to a core footwork pattern.
Dililo, that one has a specific origin mentioned.
Yes, from the Kurdish regions of Turkey. It's circular, holding hands or linking arms at the shoulders. The steps are relatively simple, but there are graceful arm and torso movements. It's often got communal singing, clapping, very lively, very joyous.
Shikhani is interesting because of its connections to other cultures.
It is. Common in Kurmanji areas of Iraqi Kurdistan, but also performed by Kurdish, Jewish, and Assyrian communities, that really shows the historical cultural exchange.
Right.
It's seen as an older style, more laid back, kind of bouncy, a basic two-step, usually with hands interlocked.
The list of other named dances in the sources is really long.
It is. Pashpa, Fateh Pashai, Leblon, Kanemiri, Somali Sema, loads of them. Shunga, Kambari Amane, Akmali. Each likely with its own specific steps, regional connections. It shows a highly developed, very nuanced choreographic vocabulary.
And then we also have dances with a clear mystical or religious purpose.
Yes, definitely. Sema is a general term for mystical dances, like those performed by Sufi dervishes aiming for spiritual states.
Right, like the whirling dervishes.
Sort of, yeah. Then the Alevi Kurds have the Sema, which is a ritual dance, part of their worship, with cosmological symbolism. The Yarsan communities have their Paisaf dance, accompanied by the sacred tambour lute.
A tambour, right.
And the Yazidi Kurds perform collective circular dances during religious holidays, symbolizing cosmic cycles and reinforcing communal belonging.
Even martial dances, like actual combat simulation.
Kind of, yeah. Chubazi, which means stick play, is a men's dance involving mock combat, showing skill and agility. Others, like Kambar Yamani and Yarpadar, are said to resemble military training exercises.
And while the focus is clearly the group, there are some solo and duo dances, too.
Yes, often performed by men, maybe to showcase courage, strength, individual skill.
Right.
But the collective participation is definitely the dominant mode.
Right.
Really, the sheer number and variety of all these dances points to a long history, diverse local traditions, different social functions, different ideas of what looks good aesthetically. Dance isn't monolithic here. It's a complex system with subgenres, each with specific meanings and contexts. Cataloging it all is quite the ongoing scholarly task.
What about the way the dancers arrange themselves, the formations, how they hold each other? That seems significant, too.
Absolutely. Common formations are lines, circles, semicircles. Men's lines are often seen as symbolizing unity, strength. The circle is particularly powerful, representing return to origin, cyclical nature, group unity. It's striking how consistently you see circular or curvilinear shapes.
And how they actually link up.
The handholds vary. Holding hands, interlacing little fingers, serste parmaklar, arm to arm or shoulder to shoulder, omuza. It depends on the dance. There's a Kurdish handhold, arms straight down, interlocked fingers or pinkies, common in Kurmanji dances, and it looks similar to some Armenian folk dances.
Interesting connection.
Yeah. And holding hands is often seen as symbolic of unity and, importantly, gender equality when men and women dance together. Sometimes hands are held across the lower back, too.
And the leader with the handkerchief, that's a very visible role.
Definitely. The leader, Sirchopi, Sarchopi, Sirgoven, Sirsem, depending on the region, guides the dance from the head of the line or circle.
Setting the pace.
Exactly. Sets and maintains the tempo, initiates movements. And the distinctive use of a handkerchief or cloth choppy, dazmal, destmal, is a key symbol of leadership. It signals changes, enhances energy, adds visual flair.
Does it symbolize anything else?
It can also symbolize peace or friendship. In Rosh Halat, the leader is the sarchopi and the handkerchief is the choppy. There are slightly different takes on the leadership role. Some see the leader at the front, sarchopi, and the person at the end, binchopi or gavani, as representing equality, like no single dominant figure. Others see the sarchopi more like a commander.
So it's all very rich symbolically.
Indeed. The formations, the handholds, the leader's role, they deeply embody core cultural values. The circle for unity and continuity, handholding for solidarity and equality, the leader as a focal point for collective action with an equal participation, the structure itself reflects and reinforces those social ideals.
Let's shift to the music now, what the outline calls the rhythmic soul. What are the essential traditional instruments that drive Kurdish dance?
Well, dance and music are practically inseparable, as you said. The soundscape is really vibrant, created by a distinct ensemble. A key one is the zurna, or sorna. It's a double reed wind instrument, kind of like a rustic oboe, often playing the lead melody.
It's got that really powerful sound, right?
Exactly. Powerful, loud, high-pitched, quite sharp or piercing, great for outdoors, large gatherings. And it has ancient roots, Anatolia, Central Asia. You see things like it on Hittite reliefs.
Wow. What provides that deep driving beat?
That would be the dahul or dahul, divul, a large double-headed bass drum. It lays down the foundational rhythm. It's played with two different beaters, a thick one, the tool for strong beats, and a thin switch, the guchen, for lighter, faster rhythms. Creates quite a complex texture.
And it's almost always with the Zurna.
Almost always. That Zurna-Dahl duo is incredibly powerful, really drives the energy of the dance.
What about stringed instruments? Any prominent ones?
Yes, the tembur, or tambur. It's a long-necked, fretted lute. It holds special significance, particularly for the Yarsana religious community and their rituals. It has a unique playing style, and for some Yarsanis, it's actually venerated as a sacred instrument.
Sacred, okay.
And then there's the def, or def, or bane, a large frame drum. You often hear it in mystical or religious contexts, like Sufi Sema or Yarsan rituals alongside the tembur, though the daf itself isn't considered sacred in Yarsanism, but it's widely used, a very characteristic percussion sound.
Are there other wind instruments we might hear?
Yes. The dozala is a double clarinet or pipe two joined pipes, basically. It produces a distinctive melody with a drone accompaniment. The nirmanay, meaning soft flute, has a mellower sound compared to the zurna, used for certain melodies or ensembles. The shemshal is a long, end-blown flute, prominent in the Mariwan area of Iranian Kurdistan. And you also hear the darbuka, a goblet-shaped hand drum for rhythm.
And more modern instruments are creeping in, too.
Sometimes, yeah. You might hear the ork, an electronic organ or keyboard, or the saz, which is a general term for long-necked lutes, including the tembur.
The prominence of those loud outdoor instruments, the zurna and dahal, really suggests where these dances historically took place, doesn't it?
It really does. It strongly suggests performances in large, open communal spaces. It reinforces that public, collective, celebratory nature. And the fact that you have distinct instrumentation for mystical contexts, like the tembur and daf for the yarsan, shows specialization, certain sounds for sacred, perhaps more intimate spiritual settings. The different instruments really point to varied performance contexts and functions.
Rhythm seems absolutely central to all this.
It is. The music is defined by this compelling rhythmic drive, which evokes a huge range of emotions. And the dance itself is all about rhythmic steps, synchronized movements. Rhythm is paramount. The tempo directly influences the kusku, that enthusiasm, that fervor, which is key to the spirit of the dance.
And the tempo isn't static, it changes.
No, it varies significantly, from slow and zarif, elegant, graceful, to fast and guslu, powerful, strong. The music usually sticks to specific meters, simple ones like 24, 34, 44, compound like 68, but also sometimes complex, irregular, or additive meters.
Complex meters. So.
Yeah. That precision is essential for the dancers to stay together, and it reflects a pretty sophisticated understanding of rhythm.
I think I've noticed in some dances the energy seems to build and build.
That's a really key characteristic, especially of the Hal Park tradition. You often get a progressive increase in tempo, both within one piece and across a sequence of dances. It might start slower, like with Garion, then speed up. Sometimes calmer rhythms are interspersed for variety, maybe a chance to catch your breath.
And the volume tends to follow the speed.
Generally, yeah. Faster often means louder. Dynamics tend to be quite loud overall, maybe mezzo forte to fortissimo.
What about the tunes themselves, the melodies?
Often relatively simple, maybe a limited range, quite repetitive. Variations are common, though. The endings, the cadences, are usually short, often descending in pitch. But despite that apparent simplicity, the music is described as full of emotion, really conducive to that communal circle dancing. And there are tons of documented traditional songs and instrumental pieces.
The outline mentions something called a rhythmological approach. What's that about?
Right. That's a way of analyzing the music that looks at the interplay between different kinds of rhythms. So natural rhythms like seasons, environment, social rhythms, economic, political, linguistic factors, and the artistic rhythms within the music itself. The idea is to get a deeper understanding by seeing how they all connect. Yeah, and there's thought to be a strong link between the rhythm of the Kurdish language and the musical rhythms, which makes sense given the rich oral traditions and poetic song texts. That progressive tempo increase in Hal Park, it's a pattern you see in folk dances globally. It's designed to build collective energy, excitement, create this shared escalating experience, which really helps group cohesion. And those slower bits allow for rest and refocus. It's like an artistic rhythm organizing the whole communal experience.
Now let's touch on the Dengbe tradition. These are the revered storytellers, the epic singers, right? How do they connect to dance music?
Yes, the Dengbeges hold a really important place in oral culture. They transmit history, legends, current events, love sagas, lullabies, all through powerful, often unaccompanied vocal performances.
Primarily vocal, not instrumental.
Primarily vocal, yeah. The focus is narrative, usually without instruments, so it's not typically dance music directly. But the themes, the narratives, maybe even some rhythmic or melodic structures in their strands, especially the more celebratory ones sung at weddings.
Which is prime dancing time.
Exactly. Those might have historically influenced or shared a common wellspring with dance music. You see the connection.
And this tradition has faced challenges.
It has, definitely. Suppression of the Kurdish language really hit it hard. But recently, there have been revitalization efforts, like establishing Mala Dengbejan Dengbej houses, places for performance, learning, archiving.
So even if Dengbejas aren't usually providing the direct music for dancing, there's a strong cultural link there.
I think so. The profound storytelling resonates with the narrative elements in many Kurdish dances, where movements might recount events or folklore, and they often happen in the same spaces, you know, weddings, gatherings, where Dengbejas might sing and people dance. So there's likely some cross-pollination of musical ideas, rhythms, themes, even if the immediate performance modes are different.
Let's turn our attention to the visual aspect now.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional costumes. They sound incredibly vibrant and diverse.
They really are. Traditional clothing is just stunning, vibrant colors, intricate designs, huge regional diversity. It's a powerful visual expression of identity, of heritage. And when worn for dancing, it obviously enhances the aesthetics, but it also carries deep cultural and symbolic meanings.
Let's start with what men typically wear. What are the key pieces?
Men's traditional clothing is both functional and symbolic. It's adapted to diverse environments, historical lifestyles. So common components include baggy trousers, sharwal or pitol.
Baggy for freedom of movement.
Exactly, freedom. But they often taper at the ankles, maybe for warmth or easier movement in the mountains. Then there's a long sleeve shirt, cross or kawa as a base layer. And some kind of vest or jacket, marksani, pestek, which is a thick felt open front one. Melki, more like a waistcoat, or choga, often cotton or wool.
And the sash around the waist.
Right, the waist sash, pashtun, pashtun, or shawl. It can be quite substantial, made of a lot of fabric, sometimes up to 25 meters wrapped around. It's decorative, but also practical, used to hold items, maybe weapons historically. The shawl is a really significant cultural symbol.
The sources mention specific regional styles, too.
Yeah, for example, shawl ushup. From central Kurdistan. That features a fitted, collarless jacket tucked into gathered trousers, the shawl part flared at the ankle, often embroidered. Then there's the Tuku Uranak style from Haraman, made from high-quality goat or sheep wool, quite expensive. That's a waistcoat or short coat, choka and trousers Uranak.
Any other interesting historical pieces?
Well, items like fakiana, a cloth, sometimes worn around the arms, maybe used as a sling, and sack, which are leg wraps for protection, had historical military significance. Some contemporary dance groups actually incorporate them.
What about headwear and footwear for men?
Headwear often involves turbans, jamana, distar, sarvan long cloths wrapped around a skullcap, kla, kila, arachin. The style can sometimes tell you about clan, tribe, or region. You might also see a patch, a decorative fabric with a kala. For footwear, klash or kalash are traditional handmade shoes. Woven white fabric upper, flat sole made of compressed fabric or leather. Lightweight, good for warm weather. Historically, in places like Hakkari, you might have seen red leather boots with iron reinforcements.
And materials and colors?
Often wool, cotton, felt. Colors can be muted earth tones, but also solid colors, pinstripes, stripes. Embroidery is common, especially on jackets and sashes. The functionality of it all, like the fakiana for combat, klash for coolness, the baggy pitol for warmth and mobility, it really points to attire shaped by history, lifestyle, environment, not just looks. It reflects a practical, resilient heritage.
Okay, onto the women's attire. This sounds even more elaborate and colorful.
Oh, it certainly is. Huh. Women's traditional clothing is known for its vibrant colors, really elaborate designs, rich ornamentation. It creates a stunning visual spectacle, especially in dance.
What are the key parts?
So the main piece is usually the dress, the kress. Long, often floor length, made from colorful fabrics, light, sheer ones like chiffon or silk for festive occasions. A key feature is the long sleeves, often with these flared triangular extensions, sometimes called fakiana or sarani.
I've seen pictures of those. They're very distinctive.
They are. They can be knotted back or wrapped around the arms, practical, but also very expressive visually. The dress often has extra triangular fabric, tirinj, sewn into the sides for fullness. Underneath, women typically wear zekras, like a long camisole, and derpy or shawar bloomers or wide trousers, often in shimmering, comfortable fabrics like cotton or silk.
And layers on top.
Yes, outerwear includes vests, kalanje, sukme, helik, often short, made of velvet or rich fabrics, with intricate embroidery, sequins, beadwork. Then there might be a coat or robe kawa or salta, shorter tailored jacket, or mashta, more like a cloak. These are longer, often velvet or highly decorated, sometimes sleeveless, with side slits.
And something at the waist.
Right, a waist embellishment. Pashtun, sal, shawl, peshtend. A colorful belt or a wide shawl accentuates the figure, adds more color and texture.
Headwear sounds complex, too.
Very diverse, often elaborate, usually involves a skullcap claw or kilah, sometimes clawfis or claws decorated with coins, chapul or parchain or rows of coins, beadwork, sequins, embroidery. Over the skullcap go scarves or turbans, lachak, halki, dismal, jamana, pushin. These are colored silk handkerchiefs or fabrics, often with elaborate fringes, embroidery, beadwork. In Sulaimania, there's a specific pushin, like a boa-like cord, wound over the jamana handkerchief. The dismal can also be the top shawl part of the dress itself.
And jewelry is essential.
Integral, yes. Earrings, bracelets, necklaces, sometimes made with cloves or colored beads, strings of gold coins on the forehead. It all adds to the richness, the festive appearance.
What about the fabrics and decorations generally?
Lots of silk, velvet, chiffon, brocades, sheer fabrics, richly textured ones. Bright colors are absolutely characteristic. Sequins, beadwork, intricate embroidery, floral, geometric patterns, metallic threads, all used extensively. The whole elaborate, brilliantly colored nature, the shimmering fabrics, sequins, jewelry, those flowing ficciana sleeves. It all suggests women's clothing in dance serves as a key cultural marker and a vital aesthetic element. It enhances the visuals, the movements, contributes massively to the vibrancy and celebration. In Iranian Kurdistan particularly, the movement of those long, colorful dresses is considered really important.
Sounds like every single element could have a meaning.
Absolutely. It's incredibly rich in symbolism. Every embroidered stitch, every color choice can potentially tell a story, connecting the wearer to their ancestry, to collective memory. It's like a visual language.
Marking identity.
Exactly. It's rooted in history, reflects diverse traditions, geography, tribal affiliations. Variations in style can indicate origin, tribe, clan, even marital or social status. The Kurdish shali, especially the men's sash or the shawl oshapik style, is a potent symbol of cultural authenticity, masculine identity.
And colors.
Symbolic colors are important. The handmade Dillon flags the leader might carry are often inspired by the Kurdish flag, red, yellow, green, decorated with sequins, thread. They symbolize craftsmanship, heritage, national pride. The general preference for vibrant colors is often said to reflect the beauty of the landscape, the spirit of the people.
And the details, the embroidery, coins.
Not just aesthetic. The patterns, beadwork, coins can carry specific cultural motifs, represent wealth or status, maybe even hold protective or auspicious meanings. Symbolism transforms the attire into this dynamic, expressive text. It communicates about individual and collective identity, history, social standing, cultural values. And it's particularly potent in dance, where the body becomes a living canvas, amplifying that communicative power.
And just like the dances, the costumes vary hugely from region to region, right?
Yes, remarkable diversity across Kurdistan. Styles vary significantly between regions, tribes, even smaller subgroups, reflects local histories, environment, practices, interactions with neighbors.
Can you give some broad examples?
Broadly, styles in northern Kurdistan, Turkey, tend to be more tight-fitting, maybe resembling Turkish or Balkan styles. Southern Kurdistan, Iraqi Iran, often features baggier trousers, maybe less embroidered jackets, sometimes called Peshmerga style. Central, Eastern, Rosh Halat, Western Rojava, Kurdistan also have their general characteristics.
And more specific local styles.
Definitely. Mukrian region in Iran, Mahabad, Sakwez, Bokan, has a distinct women's costume. Mukrani voluminous trousers, short vest top under a sheer dress gathered at the hips, large sash, pillbox hat with a triangular shawl. Historically, Mukri and Sina areas had the largest, most elaborate turbans.
We mentioned Haraman earlier.
Right. Men's choke uranak from wool. Even the men's shawl has distinct types. Rainya, Badinan, Zako, Haraman styles. Hakkari in Turkey has its own variations. Women's clothing in East Anatolia, Badinani Hakkari, differs from Sarani or Mukriani styles.
And there's a connection between the costume style and the dance movements.
Yes, there's a perceived harmony. The style can sometimes indicate the type of dance or characteristic movements. The cut of a dress, sleeve length, footwear can influence or be influenced by regional steps and gestures.
So it's all interconnected.
Deeply. Regional variations are intertwined with local history, environment, socioeconomics, the evolution of dance styles. It results in distinct subcultural identities expressed through both dress and dance. The costume can sometimes predict or certainly complement the movement style.
And there's even a special day dedicated to Kurdish dress.
Yes, Kurdish Dress Day, usually around March 10th. It's an annual observance celebrating and promoting traditional clothing.
A statement of pride.
Exactly. A vibrant affirmation of identity, pride, historical continuity. People across the Kurdistan region, government employees are encouraged. Citizens participate, wear traditional attire in public, share photos online. Its institutionalization signifies this conscious, collective effort to preserve cultural heritage against modernization, globalized fashion. It really highlights clothing as a key, visible marker of identity and distinctiveness.
So taking it all together, Kurdish dance is clearly a cornerstone of how the community expresses itself.
Absolutely. It's a powerful embodiment of communal values, mm-hmm. unity, collective celebration, shared heritage, resilience, communal joy. It thrives on collective participation, all ages, backgrounds, a potent demonstration of solidarity, shared identity.
And specific movements carry meaning.
Yes, layers of meaning. Foot stamping, for instance, often seen as symbolizing love for and connection to the land. Vital in a historically land-tied culture.
Right.
Men and women dancing hand in hand, often explicitly interpreted as a symbol of gender equality, which is a notable characteristic. Line formations of men can represent unity, strength, a metaphor for communal cohesion, fortitude. The circular movement in Halparki and other group dances can symbolize ascent to a spiritual plane, connection to origin, group unity. In agricultural societies, rhythmic stomping was sometimes seen as waking the earth, a ritual for fertility, abundance.
So even basic movements are packed with meaning.
Deeply imbued with meanings connecting the physical act to core values. Bond with land, social equality, communal cohesion, all made manifest, reinforced through embodied practice.
It also plays a really integral role in ceremonies and gatherings.
Indispensable. It's a key component of ceremonies, festivals, social gatherings, marking life events, communal celebrations, hugely prominent at weddings. Kurdish weddings are famous for extensive festivities, often 3+ days of dancing.
Wow.
And Nowruz, of course, the spring equinox, Kurdish New Year, dance is pivotal there, often around bonfires, symbolizing unity, rebirth, light over darkness, freedom, assertion of identity.
The bonfires are key.
Yes, lighting and jumping over fires are key rituals, and dance weaves through those symbolic acts. Historically, especially where culture was suppressed, like Turkey and Syria, Nowruz, with its dance, became this potent symbol of resilience, cultural resurrection, political aspiration.
So it's more than just a party.
Much more. Its role in Nowruz intertwined with myths like Kawa defeating Zahak. The renewal of nature elevates dance beyond social celebration. It's a ritualistic reaffirmation of cultural continuity, recounting historical narratives of freedom, a collective expression of hope. The convergence of myth, ritual, fire, dance creates this powerful annual event, recharging identity, reinforcing consciousness.
And it's not just for happy times.
No, it's also seen at harvest time, linking to agricultural cycles, labor. And interestingly, some regions perform specific dances during mourning ceremonies, showing its capacity to express the whole range, including grief and remembrance.
And it's a vital way of passing down stories and history, isn't it? Like an archive.
Absolutely. A vital repository. A dynamic medium for storytelling, transmitting oral history. In a culture where written records were sometimes suppressed, lost, or just not the main mode, dance acts as an embodied archive.
A living archive.
Exactly. Preserving and communicating historical narratives, social memory, cultural knowledge, even daily life across generations. The dance becomes a historical text read through movement and music.
Are there specific examples of narrative dances?
Yes, several. The Arabana dance recounts confrontations with Arab forces, choreography symbolizing advances, retreats, resistance. The Jandarma dance from Albak recalls Ottoman incursions, movements depicting resistance against the gendarmerie. The Shanga dance, often near tombs of heroes, tells the story of a Mir leader killed by Shang and the community's reaction. The Kambar Yamana dance, a Sheikhani form, depicts a group lost in a snowstorm, the movements mirroring disorientation and return. There's even that historical account of a commander reporting victory to the Median king through dance, using a red handkerchief as a sword. It illustrates how, with limited formal written records, dance was this crucial living archive, allowing preservation and transmission of narratives, memory, knowledge, in an embodied communal way. Dance wasn't just reflecting history. It was active in constructing and perpetuating it.
It's also consistently been a symbol of resistance and cultural survival.
Consistently. A powerful symbol of resistance, resilience, the struggle for freedom, cultural identity. In contexts of suppression language, culture, politics, the public performance of traditional dances like Halay, Govind, especially during Newroz or defying bans, transforms into this profound act of cultural affirmation, political resistance.
You hear about fighters dancing.
Yes. It's not uncommon to see images or hear accounts of fighters performing dances even on front lines, an expression of spirit, heritage. And efforts by states like Iran to suppress Newroz, which always includes dance arrest for attire, participation that just underscores how potent these expressions are seen as symbols of identity, dissent.
So the act itself becomes political.
The very act of dancing, especially traditional, collective, public, can become a potent political statement. When overt expression is restricted, the dance floor becomes a site of contestation, a space for cultural sovereignty, a collective voice for unspoken aspirations. That saying, as long as Kurds can dance, they can resist, really captures it. Both the people and the authorities recognize the powerful symbolism.
Beyond the social and political, it also has deep religious and mystical connections, doesn't it?
Yes, deep religious and mystical dimensions. Certain forms are woven into spiritual practices. For the Yarsim, Ali Haq, dance is integral to rituals, tasawwuf dance, with the sacred tambur. Group tambur playing and rhythmic movement are central to festivals like Jashni Mirgan.
Right.
For Yazidi Kurds, collective circular dances at religious holidays are rich in symbolism, cosmological cycles, reinforcing solidarity, spiritual closeness to God. Alevi Kurds have the Sema ritual dance, part worship, ibadat, part social solidarity. Its cyclical movements often symbolize celestial orbits, nature cycles, the soul's journey to divine union.
And Sufi connections, too.
Within Sufi traditions, the Sema whirling rhythmic movement is a spiritual discipline for ecstasy, divine communion. The melodies are often influenced by Sufi aesthetics. Specific dances might even be performed at Sufi Sema gatherings responding to harvests or disasters, or ritual engagement with life's cycles.
So it's really central to their spirituality for some groups.
Absolutely. Its integration into core religious mystical practices shows it's not peripheral, but a vital medium for devotion, altered states, and acting cosmology. A deep-rooted understanding of dance as a potent spiritual technology.
Finally, on significance, what about the role and participation of women? It seems quite prominent.
Very active, visible, significant role. Often participating alongside men in communal dances, this is often highlighted as a distinguishing feature compared to some other Middle Eastern societies with more gender segregation in public, including dance.
Hand in hand signifies equality.
That's often the explicit interpretation, yeah. Men and women holding hands dancing together is seen as a symbol of gender equality, partnership. Kurdish culture historically afforded a special place, certain rights to women, reflected in these inclusive dances. Participation can also indicate social status, integration.
And they add so much visually.
Absolutely. Contribute hugely to aesthetics, vibrancy through their colorful, embroidered traditional dresses. And they often accompany with zilgit or tilili, that ululation, high-pitched trill expressing joy, enthusiasm, encouragement. Adds auditory, emotional texture.
So it's seen as an expression of freedom.
In a broader sense, yes. Viewed by some as an embodiment and expression of women's freedom, personality, the respect they hold. The prevalent co-gendered nature is a significant cultural marker, reflecting and reinforcing ideals of equality and partnership, setting it apart from more rigidly segregated traditions in the region.
It truly sounds like a vibrant and diverse tradition, with these regional variations across the entire Kurdish landscape.
It's definitely not monolithic. It's this rich mosaic styles, rhythms, forms evolved distinctively across Kurdistan's diverse geography and cultures. Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Syria. Each region nurtured unique traditions, influenced by local environments, history, neighbors.
And there are hundreds of variations.
Yeah, the sheer number cataloged is huge, hundreds, maybe even individual villages with signature dances, regional names, nuances. A comprehensive, unified study is a massive undertaking.
That variety says a lot.
It's testament to the complex internal cultural geography. Local histories, social structures, even microclimates fostered distinct choreographic dialects within the broader shared language. It points to this decentralized grassroots evolution, deeply rooted in the specific life worlds of different communities.
Did you highlight some key regional styles?
No. Sure. In Turkey, northern Kurdistan Bakur, Halay is most common, but many forms exist, Diyarbakır, Van, Hakkari styles, typically fast-paced, rhythmic, with Zurna Dahal, Diyarbakir Sarhad region halays are known for rapid rhythms, forceful foot stamping, maybe reflecting a history of conflict, epic sounds displaying strength. Hakkari has its unique dance to the left.
What about Iran? Roshila.
Often described as more elegant, aesthetic. Graceful movement of women's long flowing dresses is a key visual. The leader is specifically sarchopi, handkerchief is choppy. Known for handmade Dillon flags, often women-crafted, using national colors. Sanandaj, Sine, has a rich repertoire of halpark rhythms, Garian, Pashtpa, etc., with specific meters, progressive tempo increase. Mukrian region, Mahabad, Sakwez, is the origin of sepe dance, known for Mukriani clothing.
And Iraq, Bashur.
Can incorporate themes of war peace, dramatic movements, narrating struggles, victories, resilience. Shakani dance is common in Kurmanji areas there.
Syria, right.
Generally fast, energetic movements. Role in strengthening community identity. Dillon is a common term for styles. Variety might be less extensive than Iran. Influences from Arabic Assyrian are evident, like the Bagi dance, originally Assyrian, performed by Kurds too. Specific dances like Delilu, Sharvi Martal are learned and performed
in other areas.
Roha, Urfa, Jazeera, Cizre, historically Kurdish areas across borders, are said to have dances expressing joyful moments, rhythms of agricultural life. These distinct characteristics really suggest dance evolved as a direct reflection of and response to specific historical experiences, socioeconomic activities, cultural interactions in different contexts. Clear correlation between lived experiences and choreographic expressions.
So how is Kurdish dance adapting and evolving now in the 21st century?
It's being dynamically reshaped. Tradition interacting with modern influences. You see stage adaptations, professional, amateur groups adapting for performance, sometimes with theatrical or contemporary ideas, but trying to retain the essence.
Fusion with other genres.
Yeah, fascinating fusion, notably with ballet. Princess Leyla Bedirksen, back in the 1920s, 30s, was a recognized Kurdish ballerina, prominent in Europe, lauded for a unique Oriental style blending Middle Eastern movement with classical ballet.
Wow, that early.
Yeah. And contemporary artists like Nazik Al-Ali from Rojava use ballet to convey peace, challenge stereotypes. Leyla Lois, a Kurdish Celtic poet ballerina in Australia, incorporates ancestral myths into choreography.
And modern music.
Integration of modern music, movement too, modern arrangements, contemporary vocabulary, sometimes combined with traditional figures, rhythms, creating hybrid forms, bridging past and present. The emergence of Kurdish artists excelling in Western classical forms like ballet, infusing them with Kurdish themes, narratives, aesthetics. It represents this dynamic cultural negotiation, artistic innovation, challenges stereotypes, expands expressive range globally, shows creative adaptation.
The Kurdish diaspora must play a huge role in this.
Absolutely crucial. Vital for preservation, evolution, international visibility. Within diaspora communities, new stylistic variations emerge as traditional forms interact with different cultural environments, experiences of displacement.
So it's not just preserving, it's changing too.
Exactly. But the active practice, transmission of folkloric dances in diaspora, shows a strong, enduring connection to heritage. Dance becomes a vital link to the homeland. Cultural continuity across generations.
Festivals must be important.
Hugely. Minokon governing Kurdistan and Germany, annual festival, parades, displays, competitions, vibrant space for expressing identity, fostering community, asserting resistance, empowering, especially engaging younger generations. Neuro celebrations in diaspora too. Cologne, for example, traditional dance is central. Important platforms for political expression, cultural advocacy.
So it's more than just entertainment for the diaspora.
Far more. It's a vital mechanism for community building, social cohesion, support in new environments. Critical tool for intergenerational transmission. Public performances offer a powerful assertion of identity, presence, often intertwined with political advocacy.
Are there specific initiatives aimed at cultural preservation and promotion?
Yes, various initiatives by communities, organizations, individuals recognizing its importance. Cultural institutes like the Kurdish Institute of Paris since 83, the newer one in Lausanne, Switzerland, preserving, promoting language, culture, including dance. Important hubs. The Kurdistan Center for Arts and Culture, KSASI, in Erbil, works on collection, digitization, education, artist support.
Dance groups and academies.
Numerous professional and amateur active in Kurdistan and diaspora performing at events. Even larger groups like Anadolu Atesi, Fire of Anatolia, in Turkey incorporate Kurdish elements. Its director hopes to open an arts academy in Erbil, building on their network training thousands.
Competitions too.
Folk dance competitions, like in Hakkari, Turkey, preserve, promote local culture, often supervised by authorities, encourage continuation. And diaspora festivals like Mitrakhana governed in Kurdistan feature dance prominently.
What about academically?
Growing efforts for formal instruction theory. People like Mustafa Shaheen in Rojava emphasize theory philosophy alongside practice, highlighting the need for academic resources. The Kurdish Project offers grants for cultural initiatives. Academic institutions like NEIU in the U.S. have summer institutes, including Kurdish culture. Scholars continue research, documentation. But there's a recognized need for more extensive, systematic research and archiving, given the diversity and preservation challenges.
So lots of effort.
Multifaceted efforts, grassroots, diaspora festivals, institutions, academic programs, performing arts reflect broad, deep recognition of its importance, often in challenging contexts, needing sustained commitment, resources.
But there must still be challenges facing the tradition.
Yes. Despite its resilience, definitely challenges. Cultural appropriation is one dominant state cultures, misattributing, recategorizing Kurdish dances as, say, Turkish folk dances. That's an erasure of origins, history.
And political suppression.
Historically and currently, yes, in several countries. Syria saw violent oppression of Newroz, casualties, arrests. Learning Kurdish dance reportedly banned during Baath era. Iran often intensifies pressure on Newroz attempts to halt it, censorship, harassment, arrests for attire or participation. Turkey had long periods of bans on Kurdish language, cultural expression.
And modernization.
Yeah.
Globalization.
Impact of those, too. Traditional dress, integral to the aesthetic, is disappearing from daily life as youth adopt Western styles or host country attire in diaspora. Contemporary musicians might alter original styles with modern instruments, techniques.
So it's pressure from outside and inside.
Exactly. External suppression, internal pressures of modernization creates a complex, sometimes precarious environment. The resistance can strengthen symbolic power. Navigating modernization needs proactive strategies to stay relevant for younger generations, balancing authenticity with contemporary appeal.
What's the current situation like? Urban versus rural, youth involvement.
Assessing precisely is complex, but it's dynamic, evolving. Variations exist between village by city settings. Rural might preserve older forms. Urban see more fusion, staged stuff, generational shifts. While modernization is a challenge, less dress use, there's compelling evidence of significant, even growing, interest and participation, especially among youth. Particularly during festivals like Newroz, social media in East Kurdistan apparently fueled enthusiasm.
So it's not just fading away.
No, that simple narrative seems inaccurate. The Anadolu Atesi director noted a natural aptitude in Kurdish children. It's widely practiced family celebrations, weddings, festivals in Kurdistan and diaspora. It's a dynamic interplay of tradition and youth culture. Young Kurds finding new ways to connect, express, reinterpret heritage through dance, often amplified by tech, suggests capacity for adaptation, renewal, but more detailed ethnographic research needed for the nuances across all regions.
Finally, let's briefly look at how Kurdish dance relates to other dance traditions in the Middle East. How does it compare?
Yeah, comparing illuminates shared roots, historical interactions, distinct paths. With Turkish halay, you see shared terms, forms. Halay is used in Kurmanji for folk dance. The governed is indigenous equivalent. Suggests deep connections, mutual influence in Anatolia. Both have line circle, linked dancers, often Zernadavul.
But also the appropriation issue.
Right, that's the point of contention. Turkish institutions sometimes presenting Kurdish dances as Turkish halay, or generic Anatolian, erasing origins. So halay is both bridge and battleground. Common instruments point to a broader regional soundscape, though.
What about Arabic dabki?
Shares fundamental structures, line circle, linked, unison, rhythmic foot stomping, energetic steps. Similarities noted with Armenian kochari, Assyrian kiga, Iraqi chobi, Turkish halay. Fits a broader family of Middle Eastern line circle dances.
But differences too.
While structures are similar, specific rhythms, melodies, choreography, cultural meanings can vary significantly. It indicates shared choreographic principles, a common dance language, but with distinct dialects.
How does it fit within Persian or Iranian folk dance?
Recognized as one of Iran's oldest, most vibrant local traditions, alongside other ethnic styles, Kurdish dance is predominantly collective chain line, often mixed gender. This distinguishes it from some other Iranian forms, especially solo improvisational classical Persian dance with delicate hand arm work.
Music and costumes different too.
Music for energetic Kurdish, Zernadahul, distinct from subtle, complex Persian art music, or the 68 rang of Iranian solo dance. Iranian state has sometimes promoted harmonious movements, band 68. Costumes are regionally specific, vibrant, layered, embroidered, distinct from classical Persian court silks. Both express identity, but the collective mixed gender emphasis in Kurdish might reflect different social dynamics than solo or segregated forms elsewhere in Iran. The political climate also impacts expression.
And comparisons with Armenian and Assyrian dances, there must be overlap there.
Notable similarities, historical connections, coexisted in overlapping regions. That specific Kurmanji handhold, straight down interlocked fingers pinky, is familiar to Armenian folk dancers' common origins or exchange. Armenian Kuchari is a similar line dance to Depka Kurdish Hele.
And Assyrian.
Shikani dance performed by Kurds, Assyrians, some Armenians, deep cultural intermingling. Assyrian Kiga, similar line dance. Evidence of mutual influence, some Rojava Kurdish dances show Assyrian influence. Boggy. Assyrian Georgina described as Kurdish inspired. Assyrian dances like Bablaka, Heavy Kiga share fundamentals with Kurdish. Line circle, handholds, knee bends, footwork. Assyrian Kachari has arm on arm holds like some Kurdish dance, repetitive leg kick.
So lots of borrowing and sharing.
Significant overlap in names, handholds, structures points to profound, long-standing history of cultural exchange, mutual influence, shared heritage. Cultural borrowing, blending is inevitable, enriching. Shared choreographic heritage underscores their interconnectedness.
In conclusion, then, Kurdish dance is clearly a multifaceted, deeply significant aspect of Kurdish culture. It serves as this powerful means of expressing community, preserving history, resisting oppression, and connecting with spiritual traditions.
Exactly. Its vibrant regional variations, its continued evolution in the 21st century, both within Kurdistan and in the diaspora, really highlight its enduring spirit and adaptability.
And the connections and distinctions it shares with other Middle Eastern dance traditions just further underscore that rich tapestry of cultural exchange in the region.
We really hope this exploration has provided you, our listener, with a deeper appreciation for the profound cultural value and enduring legacy of Kurdish dance. Maybe you'll even be inspired to explore some of the specific dances or the music we've touched upon further.
Thank you for joining us on the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.